right, as we jump back into James this evening, the section, really I think almost the entire chapter, is dealing with humility. And it's humility coming out in about three different ways. You remember back in verse 1, he asked the question, where do all the battles, fights in the home, fights in the church, fights in the workplace, where do they all come from? And he says they all come from one thing, envy. And envy essentially means you got something that I want, or you got something that I don't think you deserve, and it irritates me, and so what's my next step? I'm going to get mad. I'm going to say something cutting. I'm going to malign your motive or say something bad about you. It just depends on how it comes out. But we saw with Cain, what was it that he was filled with that caused him to kill his brother? He was filled with envy. And Joseph sold his brothers into slavery because of envy. And Pilate perceived that they wanted to crucify Jesus because of envy. And the Jews were persecuting the Christians because of envy. It's just a sense. I have a domain and I have a realm and I expect to be treated in a certain way in that realm. And if I don't get what I think I should get, my next response is going to be that sense of discomfort, that sense of this is not right, this is not fair. And I think it's where road rage comes from. I think it's where all of the grudges that people hold come from. Somehow we have perceived that we are the ones the world revolves around. Where did we get that? That started in our youth, right? When you're a child, you watch these little kids play with each other. There's a little bit of envy going on in there. Kid snatches a toy, something like that. If we have wise parents, they get it out of us. If they don't, then we have to get it out of ourselves. So he ended that section, as I note in this particular first page, that this is the second of three times that James is going to talk about humility. And the first time, he made the point that in verse 6 that God resists the who? The proud. All right? And it's the proud who start these battles. It's the proud, the arrogant, the people who think that they shouldn't turn the other cheek. They shouldn't have to go the second mile. They shouldn't have to be the ones that are wronged. And they're not always ready to do that. And so, but unfortunately, if we continue to be proud, what does God have to do? He's got to knock that out of us, right? He's got to resist that. Because can we get into heaven with this pride? See, we can't. So that was the first section. Then he continues on in verse 7 by saying, therefore, submit to God. And then he finally gets in verse 10 to humble yourselves in the sight of the Lord, and he will lift you up. Now, what does humility mean? What does it basically mean? You see the definition here, which means you don't rise very far from the ground, but how does that translate into everyday life? Rob?
Well, you look at other scriptures, I mean, not thinking more highly of yourself than what we're supposed to be.
Okay, and what are we supposed to be? What are we?
Dust.
We're just creatures, right? We are God's creation. And where we would ever get the idea that we can dictate to God how life's going to go, or we can decide how our life is going to go, and yet God had a plan for all of us, and what happened?
We messed it up.
We are not always interested in helping God take care of his plans. And that's where I think the true humility will come out, is when we've made the decision that we are here as God's created beings. And I'm going to make this point at the end of the section, but let's just talk a little bit about it now. When he asked the Corinthians, what do you have that you didn't receive? What was the answer? Nothing. And Peter says, if anyone has a gift, ministering it among yourselves as good stewards of the grace of God. So if I'm intelligent, or I'm good looking, or I'm gregarious, or I've got money, or whatever it is that I have, where did I get it? It's a gift. And There's nothing that we have. So often people, you know, they like this pecking order. We saw it with the apostles. They wanted to know who was going to be the greatest in the kingdom of heaven, and they were vying for who was going to be the greatest in the kingdom of heaven. And there's always a pecking order at work, and there's always a pecking order at school, and there's often a pecking order in the churches. And when people have the audacity to come up out of there where they're supposed to be, what starts to happen? See, that's when the problems start. Yeah. But if we were humble, you know, Jesus, did Jesus ever snap at his apostles? See, he never started a war. He was always humble. And so we have to recognize two things. Number one, everything that we have, from our body to our lives to the world we live in to the air we breathe to all of the gifts that we have, they've all come from God. And if we will humble ourselves under God's mighty hand, what's he going to be able to do? He can lift us up. But we can't short-circuit that. We can't shortcut that. There's a certain process that we have to go through. Now, Jesus starts. Remember when they were talking, he says, "Who then is the greatest in the kingdom of heaven?" And his answer in verse 4, "Whoever humbles himself is this little child." Then, later, when he condemns the Pharisees, you see in the very middle of the first page, what was it the Pharisees wanted? All their works they do to be seen of men. Then you remember, even among the leaders, there were many who believed in Jesus, but why wouldn't they confess it? Because they loved the glory of men or the praise of men more than the praise of God. And so Jesus says, you're not going to have that among you. Whoever humbles himself, he's going to be the one that's exalted. Then he gives the interesting one. When you're invited to a wedding feast, or when you're invited to a certain place, where do you think you should set yourself? Where do you think you should be? Well, you know, that depends on how much humility you have, right? Some people would say, I'm just grateful to be here and I'll sit at the lowest place. But some people would say, I'm very important to this guy. I'm the best man, or I'm the best friend, or I'm this or I'm that. But maybe I don't realize there's 15 other people who are closer than me, and what's going to happen, according to Jesus here? Yeah, you're going to be told to go lower. So it's better, and of course, I don't think he's dealing here with these machinations inside of our mind about how we can come out on top. I think what he's telling us is if you'll humble yourselves under the mighty hand of God, what's God going to do?
You're going to come out on top.
Yeah, you're going to get raised up. So wait for God to do it. Don't ever put yourself forward. Wait for God. When God is ready, then that's going to happen. And then you remember the next parable he's got there in Luke chapter 18 about the Pharisee who comes before God and says, "Well, I'm so glad I'm not like everybody else." And I've noticed this sometimes in the Lord's church. We're members of the Church of Christ, and therefore we're what? We're better than everybody else. Is that true?
No.
That's not true at all. And that shouldn't be our philosophy. Our philosophy should be, I'm so grateful that God brought me to the truth, and I want to do everything I can to help these people. It's not a sign of being better than somebody else. It's only an opportunity to be more useful to other people. So I think that, let's go ahead and turn the page. What about Jesus? You remember in John 13? He knew that the Father had given all things into his hands. In other words, he already knew all authority had been given to me in heaven and on earth. I'm going to be King of kings and Lord of lords. He knew he'd come from God. He was going back to God. What's the next thing he does?
Allow himself to be crucified.
Well, no. Before that, this is at the upper room, and nobody's feet are washed.
Okay.
And everybody's too good to wash other people's feet because we have our pecking order, and Peter's just too good to wash anybody else's feet. And when Jesus comes to him, what does he tell Jesus?
I gotta wash my feet.
You're too good to wash my feet. I'll never let you wash my feet. Well, what was wrong with that philosophy? Jesus said, if you don't let me wash your feet, you what? There's the door. You have no part with me. This is a critical thing you have to learn, Peter, that you have to be humble, that you have to be willing. And he learned it really well. But it took a little while. And so So, and you can look at those three verses I mentioned earlier, the one in 1 Corinthians 4 is where Paul said, you don't have anything that you didn't receive. And then in Romans 12 and 1 Peter chapter 4, he talks about the fact that everything we have is a gift. There's nothing we have. Intelligence, wisdom, opportunities. It's all a gift. It's not something we deserve. And so... So if we want God to be able to lift us up, we've got to have the humility first. And this is a hard lesson to learn. It's hard to turn the other cheek because we don't feel like the person that is harming us deserves to treat us like this. And so our philosophy is there's a definite pecking order and you're out of order. Therefore, if I have a gun, what should I do? I should shoot you because you're out of order. But what did the Lord say? Now, I'm not talking about self-defense. I'm talking about people who are just proud and arrogant and who just don't have the right attitude. All right. Okay. Let's go ahead and then and jump into verse 11 where he says, and I think this is also humility. I think that this is also a serious problem we all have when somebody that we know, for whatever reason, does something that we don't appreciate or is getting praise that we don't think they deserve or is getting some honor that we don't think, what do we tend to do? And maybe nobody here does that. I hope that nobody here does that. But there were certain some people in James's day who would cut them down, speak evil of them, say something negative about them. And James here tells us that and this is in the imperative mode, which means this is a command. Do not speak evil of another individual. So just because we know bad things about people, just because we know little secrets or little things that other people don't know that we could use to tear them down, and sometimes we do that in private conversations with husbands and wives. Sometimes we do that amongst our friends in the congregation. We say things because we don't like something that has just been said, or we don't like some view that somebody has of somebody, and we want to straighten that out. So the best way to straighten it out is what? It's to gossip. So when we find ourselves doing that, we find ourselves saying negative things about other people, we need to realize something. This is a serious problem. Now, he's not saying that... let me not get ahead of myself here. Let's go ahead and turn to page 3. The compound word here is just talking down. I think that might be a better way to translate it for us to really see. You talk people down. In other words, you say something just slightly negative, just something to tip the scales a little bit so that, quote, this individual will be seen more clearly. Is that my role to do that? Is it our role to make sure everybody sees other people clearly? No, it's our role to bear all things, believe all things, hope all things, endure all things. It's our role. Why not rather take wrong? Why not turn the other cheek? It is not our role. We have some commands. We have some commands regarding judgment. But those commands are very narrow in their operation. And so the safest thing to do, and Paul's going to deal with this on the next page. He says, judge nothing before the time when God reveals what? The secrets of men's hearts. You can see what I'm doing. Do you know why I'm doing it? See, we can see other people struggling in their weaknesses and assume that they're just not cut out to be a Christian. We can see people who are really struggling, really working hard, but not measuring up in some way or another. And so we have to be very, very careful here. Because, like I said, I think he's still continuing the same theme of these fights and wars and bitterness. And, you know, where do all church problems come from? Somebody is not wanting to turn the other cheek. Somebody, you remember the definition of love? Love suffers long and is kind. Love does not take account of evil. Love bears all things and believes all things and hopes all things and endures all things. And so unless we are compelled to get involved, we just let people develop and grow and we don't speak evil. But as I say, you remember that passage in Ecclesiastes where he says, don't take it to heart when your servant curses you because you know that what? You've cursed others yourself. We've all, even if it's just been in our mind, maybe we never said anything. And we would have been very intelligent if we hadn't said anything. But sometimes it just comes out. But even if we just think it, that's enough for us to understand how prevalent a problem this is. How prevalent it is. And how often people will cut off the growth and development by some rude or cutting remark. And what did Jesus say? If you cause a little one to stumble, what would it be better? Yeah, I mean, that's the most graphic. I mean, if you replay that in your mind, you tie the rope around your neck, you tie the rope around the stone, you pick the stone up, and you throw it over the side of the boat. What's going to happen next? You're going underwater, and you're going to drown. And Jesus says, you know something? Better for you to do that than to do something that would cause somebody to stumble. And so, if we speak evil against a brother, so that's the next clause there in the middle of page 3, if we speak evil of a brother, or we judge our brother. And think about this, can you say something bad about somebody before you judge them? First, you have to make an assessment, right? Can't. I mean, you can't just go around saying bad things about people you pull out of the air, because if you do, what's going to happen sooner or later? You're going to get caught. People are going to look down on you. So you have to look at people and you have to try to come up with these ideas, these viewpoints about individuals. And so if you speak evil of a brother, you're judging your brother. And if we pass judgment on a brother, then this is what puts us into a very difficult situation. In Romans 14 and in 1 Corinthians 8, 9, and 10, Paul deals with a lot of different subjects. But the main purpose of each of those subjects is to keep us from doing what? You're eating meat that I don't think is right to eat. And what's my next possible solution? I'm right and you're wrong. I'm better than you are. Now, is that what Paul wants us to do? No, he says, who are you to judge your brother? To his own Lord, he stands or falls. And so, judging a brother requires us to do something. And this is a very interesting point. And I kind of outlined this at the bottom of page 3. If we carry it too far, can we withdraw from people? Can we not pass judgment on people? No, if your brother sins, what do you have to do? You have to go show them their fault. How do you show them their fault if you haven't passed judgment? So there is a realm, but it's a very tiny one. It's a realm where you see somebody doing something that you know is wrong, and you're going to go and you're going to show them their fault. But other than that, we have no other business in this realm. All right, let's turn to page 4. The standard rule for Christians is given in Matthew chapter 7, verses 1 through 5, and Luke chapter 6, and verse 37, and that is what? What are we not supposed to do? Don't judge. That's the normal rule. Unless you're forced to judge, what do? You leave it alone. Who's the judge? God. Can God see all the ends? Does he know what's going to happen? Does he understand these situations better than we do? We don't have to pass judgment. We don't have to make opinions. When we make an accusation or we charge somebody with something based on our understanding and not based on Scripture, then we're in violation of this verse. And that's why you know, before you make the decision, I have to go talk to this individual, or I have to say this about this individual. Before you make that decision, you better go through all of these steps and make sure that the reason this is being done is in the best interest of that individual and not because of any other reason. So, and those three verses there, again, on the, toward the top of page 4, Romans 14, and then 1 Corinthians 4, 5, we're told, don't pass judgment. You can't have strong opinions about things that God doesn't have a strong opinion about. I mean, let's face it. Did the Pharisees make assessments about Jesus that weren't true because of their envy? And was it helpful to them? Did it hurt him? Well, I don't know if it hurt him or not. I mean, it was by the determinate counsel and foreknowledge of God that the Jews did what? You, by the hands of lawless men, did crucify and slay. By the determinate counsel and foreknowledge of God. They didn't, you know, they thought they were fighting. It was just like Pharaoh. Pharaoh thought he was fighting God. But what was he doing every time he did what he thought was fighting God? Exactly what God wanted. And so you can't win. And God is going to thwart. If we end up on the wrong side of this, then we're going to be in battles with God. Because God's wanting all men to be saved and come to the knowledge of the truth. And if we're not with him on that, if we're not doing everything in our power to be kind and gentle and understanding and only dealing with judgmental issues when we're forced to. Otherwise, leave it alone. There's no reason to get involved in a situation that we don't have any need or business to be judging. And so we have these commands. But what James now does, he makes an interesting twist here. You know, I don't think anywhere else in the scriptures it does this. But here he says, if you continue to speak against a brother, this is toward the middle, but toward a little bit lower than the middle. If you continue to pass judgment on other people and make these kind of comments, you're not only in violation of law, but what are you actually doing? You're speaking evil of that law. You're saying, I don't think too much of that law. The law doesn't make sense to me. I'm not going to be, I'm not going to abide in that law. And we see the denominations do this, and we condemn them for it, rightfully so. And Paul says, I permit not a woman to speak or have dominion over a man. And what do they say? Paul was a chauvinist, and what are we going to do with that law? We're going to judge. We're going to speak evil of that law, and then we're going to ignore it. What about the homosexuals? What are they doing with some of Paul's words? Are they judging the law? And so we see this a lot, and we understand and we see clearly this is wrong. It is wrong to take any law of God and set it aside. But what James is trying to help us understand is that if we don't abide under this law, now this, remember, this isn't the first time he's dealt with judgment. He's already talked about judgment in the second chapter. Judgment is without mercy to him who doesn't show any mercy. Now he just says, don't speak evil of a brother and don't judge a brother. And as I said, he's not denying what the Lord said about church discipline. He's not denying what the Lord said about marking false teachers or about doing the things that he commands us to do. But if we're not in that, if we're not standing right in that box, I'm condemning a false teacher, or I'm going and showing a brother a fault, or I am involved in an activity here where I'm trying to show agape love. If I don't have that as my motivation and my rationale, then what's God saying? So the next time, and I'm guilty of this sometimes, but the next time the driver in front of you does something dumb and you say, what an idiot. What have you just done? Do you know it was because he was an idiot that he did that? Maybe it was just a mistake. Maybe he didn't get a good night's sleep and he just made a mistake. Does that make him an idiot? But what did we do? We spoke evil. And we tend to do that. We tend to do that with our children sometimes. We pass judgment on some of the things that they do without really any criteria at all, except we're irritated at them and we're going to pass a judgment on them. And like I said, we see it in the home, we see it in the car, we see it in the workplace, and unfortunately, we will see it in the church. Charles?
You know, a lot of times we're in positions where people do foolish things, you know, and it may be where someone does something that is foolish, and you know that it's a foolish thing that they do. It's not so much that you're judging, with me personally, it's just that it's out where you would say, or you have an opinion about how you felt about that situation. And that's the way that I kind of look at that. If someone put you in a position where something would happen, and it's a very foolish thing that they did, and I think that if I was in a situation like that and you brought it to my attention, then I would have to think about, okay, well, maybe I did do something that I shouldn't have done. I said something that I shouldn't have said.
Right.
I mean, with me personally, but everybody doesn't look at the situation like that. Because see, there are a lot of people that put you in positions, and you have a right to think whatever you think, whatever, and you can be wrong about it. But I've always thought that if you were right about something and you followed through with it, and you know that you were right, and you made a statement or whatever about whatever it was, and maybe the person may know about it, maybe they don't, but you're just doing what you think that is right in your eyesight.
Right, but what I'm hearing you say is agape love. You're saying, I need to go and help this person with that foolish thing that he said. But you're not going home to Vera and saying, yeah, Alan, he is such an idiot. Look what he did now.
No.
What do you think? Should I go talk to him? The guy is such a dope. And what would, you know, you see what I'm saying?
No,
but that tends to be what a lot of people will do. Now, I hope, hopefully, like I said, that never is done here. But we've all gotten caught up in this. In one way or another, like I say, when we're angry in the car or when we are frustrated, well, I guess I won't say we all do. Maybe there's somebody here who is so full of agape love that they just don't do this at all. They never pass any judgments. They don't bring railing accusations against people with nothing but their own assumptions to back it up. Like I said, we can see what people do, but we never know why they did it. We don't know if they did it because they're an idiot. We don't know if they did it because, but like I say, when you start passing judgments like that, and that's why Jesus says in Matthew 5, if you say raka, if you say moron, if you say idiot, you're in danger. Jack, sorry.
You know, it seems to me that this, judge not that you be not judged, is one of the most misused and misapplied passages in society. You talked about wanting to, taking a stand against God's law. I don't like that law, so I'm going to throw that law out. People want to tend to do that with judging. You mentioned going to a brother to point out error. That takes a matter of judgment, but it's not your judgment. You're using God's word as the standard, but society doesn't want that done. I talked to a young man who has been several years ago, a new Christian, who was concerned about his Catholic parents and wanted to talk to him, but he didn't want to judge him. And I told him, you're not making the kind of judgment that we're talking about, that we're not to judge. What you're trying to do is let God's word be the judge and show them where their error is. You're not trying to just judge him and say, you're just going to have to, get what you deserve on the day of judgment. You're making a judgment to help them, as you mentioned, the agape, to try to help them. But I just, we hear all the time, judge not that you be not judged. Well, wait a minute. I was just trying to point out an error and give you the reason for that error, not put you down.
Right, right. And that's, of course, the Richter scale on this side. But so many people, after they've done that, go over and start judging people. Yeah. And so this passage is dealing with a very narrow realm. It's dealing with matters of judgment, where people have the right to make their own decisions, and we shouldn't pass judgment, and we shouldn't say things. We shouldn't say negative things about them. Go ahead.
Is it your assessment here that this is still part of, basically from chapter 1, the effectual working of faith, the perfect man, you know, is tested, endures. The humble, perfect man asks from wisdom from on high. And would you say then that the rest of, you know, this chapter, chapter 3, chapter 2, is sort of giving examples of the arrogant man, the one who doesn't see his place as, like you said earlier, a creature of God, or in this case, a child of God. And so, I mean, I look at chapter 4 and consider how chapter 3 ended, and we see these failure to exercise, to even ask for wisdom from on high, the wisdom of God. And so we see things like, well, even in chapter 3, using your tongue, not realizing what your tongue is for.
Right.
We see the failure to keep your place with your fellow man, and instead being in a position where you're, well, judging them, instead of applying humbly applying the wisdom of God, or not recognizing your place with respect to the law. A wise man won't do that. A wise man who's a child of God, like from chapter 1, is not going to be arrogant, but is going to be humble, having asked for wisdom to be perfect. Do you see that this is just additional tactical examples of that arrogant man?
Yeah, no, I think the whole chapter is dealing with that. And, of course, he's dealt with the tongue 3 times now. And yet here he is hitting it again, because he knows how easy it is for us to overlook the obvious, because what you can see in other people so often, can you see it in yourself? And so here we have a situation where God is in heaven, he's the lawgiver, he's the judge, he's the one who has commanded us not to do this, and if we set that aside, what is that telling God about us? That we think more highly of ourselves than we ought to think. And as long as we're like that, can we be that vessel unto honor, meet for the master's use, prepared for every good work? No, we're always going to be passed over. God's going to say, I can't send this person out to do that, because that individual, I don't have any confidence in them. They're constantly causing problems. We've all met preachers that all they do is split churches. And we've all met members that all they do is that they have church problems everywhere they go, because they don't have the humility to realize, I need to be a part of this congregation and I need to do everything in my power not to create these kind of problems. Go ahead, Ken.
Yeah, I was just, this somehow made me think of what Satan promised to Eve. You know, your eyes will be opened and you'll be as gods and you'll know good and evil. I mean, that's, you know, that's kind of the way they act, or the way even I can act. I mean, like, I see the whole situation and I'm saying, this is good, this is evil, and that's not a good thing.
Well, we just have to recognize that God gave all these commands for our good. And when we're right in the middle of them, we're going to be a blessing to everyone, including ourselves. But this particular one, as I say, it's really hard to see. And I've been in people's homes before, people that I really respected, and because they're irritated, they say something negative against somebody, and I think in the back of my mind, I wonder what they say about me when I'm not here and they're irritated. But because that's a sign of a serious weakness, when we can't control our tongue and we can't control the emotions of anger or frustration, most of us, even after we do it, the next day, how do we feel? Man, I wish I hadn't said that. I wish that hadn't been said. I'm going to go apologize for it, but how do you undo it? See, and that's what we do. We agonize over things like that. And I think that's what the Lord wants us to be doing here. He wants us to be looking at this, and instead of saying, well, judge not that you be not judged is misapplied, therefore, and then we never quite get to making the personal applications we need to make about this passage of Scripture, which is we need to be careful that we don't say these harsh and cutting things to our spouse, to our children, to our co-workers, to our brethren, because they're out of place and they're not a part of our domain, and we need to stay out of that. We can't speak evil against the law. All right, let's go ahead and jump to page 5. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on this judging of the law. You can kind of look at it later. But let's just get to verse 12 where it says, how many lawgivers are there? There's only one. And who is it? Well, it's the Father. And He's the one who wrote His laws in our heart. But if we won't submit to those laws, where are they written? Are they internal controls yet? See, what's the difference between the law of Moses with the Ten Commandments on stone and the new law where the Holy Spirit is writing these laws on our heart? What's the difference? Well, it's internal control. I want to do this. This is in my heart. This isn't something outside of myself that I'm trying to force myself to do. This is something within myself. And so once we read something that God does or doesn't want done, it goes into our heart. And from that point onward, what are we doing? Every time we make an assessment, what are we looking at? I don't want to violate this. I don't want to. And as I said, we don't have to learn a million things, because most of us only have a few things we really struggle with, and those are the ones we need to figure out and get to work on. Now, maybe some of you here this evening, you're looking at this, you're saying, well, I don't really have a problem with this. This isn't a realm that I have difficulty with. But see, there's principles here. The principle of passing judgment on a law is based on, I don't feel like I need to submit to that law. And it wouldn't matter what the law is. He's just making the point that only God on the judgment day is going to be able to pass judgment on each one of us. And if on that day we find that we've been in violation of this law, what's going to happen? See, what's going to happen is we're going to hear, depart. You practice lawlessness. You did not submit to this law. And it doesn't matter what the law is. It can be worship. It can be prayer. To him who knoweth to do good and doeth it not. To him it is sin. It can be personal evangelism. It can be any one of a number of things where we know what we're supposed to be doing, but we absolutely refuse to do it. And so in that context, we just need to start monitoring how we talk about other people in the privacy of our home with our spouse, or in the privacy of our workplace with our good friend. And we need to watch how we say, how we talk about people. You know, politics is a perfect realm where you can see this. What does God say about the ruler of your people? Don't speak evil of the ruler of your people. How many of us just set aside that law if it's a president we don't like? You know, whether it was Obama or whether it's Trump or whether it's Clinton, if we violated that law, are we a law breaker or a judger of law? Yeah, we can't do that. We can't be passing judgment on the leaders of the land. Now, does that mean we can't make our own decision whether what they're doing is good or evil? Well, yeah, you can do that. But you can't speak evil of them because God put them into that position. And so just kind of keep an eye on yourself here. Make sure, how did James put it in chapter 3? We got a mouth that's a fountain. What's coming out of your mouth? Sweet water or bitter? And just kind of monitor yourself tomorrow. Just kind of see how often you get a little irked at somebody and you either think or say something that you now realize, I shouldn't talk about people or think about people like that. But it is something that becomes a serious problem for many people. All right, well, we'll go ahead and stop there since we're out of time. I was hoping to get a little bit further. But we'll start in verse 13 next week and hopefully wind down chapter 4 here, maybe in the next week or two. All right, thank you.